it's the machlokes, the Bavli and Yerushalmi, what the nature of the prohibition to get married on Shabbos is. Is it an independent idea of Nira Kekone Kinyan, or is it specifically Shema Yichtov, as if we are concerned that the Chassan specifically has a concern of Ksiva? So that was the view of the Bavli, which he was working off of Ramah, that essentially Bizman Hazeh, there isn't much of a Ksiva role for a contemporary Chassan, and therefore that was why he was strongly inclined to say that there is no relevance of such a Gezer as Bizman Hazeh, and the Makom Tchak or the Hakel. Okay, in any event, so our agenda for today, so we have basically some housekeeping to do. What I'd like to do is the following. Today is officially a Halacha Maisa day, so I do want to talk about some of the practical issues that come up concerning the Gezeira of Refuah that we spoke about last week. I want to emphasize that this is not to be taken as any kind of a comprehensive discussion about Refuah on Shabbos. There's much to say about the Halachas of Pikuach Nefesh and Chol She'ein Bo Sakana and the rules about what can be suspended in terms of Hilchos Shabbos in that area, that we wouldn't really get into at all. Nor would we even necessarily address all of the side issues that could be relevant, even regarding Abari or the like, specifically just in terms of what are the implications of the Gezeira of Refuah. That would really be what we would be talking about today. But before we start that, I just wanted to fill in some details about some topics that we talked about on Thursday. It's important as we go into Adar, we go into Purim, we're into Adar already, as we go into Purim, to have an understanding of some of the inyanim of the theme of Purim. And maybe we'll have a little bit of time also on Wednesday to talk about that, but just the topic that we had started with on Thursday, I wanted to say a few more words about that. We started to talk about the relationship of Zachar to Purim and the idea of Zachar representing cynicism and how that perhaps is in contrast to the sense of humor of Purim and how the idea of levity on Purim in general, how it plays out, and especially in anticipation of Yeshiva's celebration of Purim, thought it's worth just fleshing out a few of those details. So one of the issues we started to talk about is that there is an idea that Shechter developed, the name of the Rav, that the Halachta V'drachav encompasses many different themes, and that one of them is to have a sense of humor. That the Gemara in the beginning of Avodah Zarah tells us that one of the things that HaKadosh Baruch Hu does with his day is he is Mesachek Imal V'yasa, that he plays with the big fish. It's very hard to understand why that's something that is important for us to know about, and hard to understand why we're told that. And the Rav suggested that this was a fulfillment of the idea of Halachta V'drachav, that there is a practical lesson we can learn from this. And what is that practical lesson? That you can't take everything so seriously, that you can't assume that everything has to be taken with equal severity. And you have to be able to laugh at things. And I don't remember how much we were able to go into this on Thursday, but I know we just said it very quickly. So it seems possible to suggest that what the Rav was getting at is that the idea of Halachta V'drachav specifically in that model has to do with the idea of perspective. We talk of a sense of humor as being a notion of perspective, of the idea that you're able to see everything in its place. And that clearly has a major role in Avodas Hashem, because if you don't know what's important and what's not, so then there's no ability to value anything, there's no ability to esteem anything, and therefore there's no chashivas for Torah either. The idea of significance is something that's both absolute and relative, meaning that something is either valuable or isn't. And also, it's relative, things are valuable compared to other things. So we only have the ability to give chashivas, to give importance to anything, and we can see it in the context of where it fits. So if that's how we define a sense of humor, a sense of perspective, so it makes sense that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has the ultimate sense of humor in that sense. He knows where everything fits. He knows how everything makes sense. So we don't really know that. So we try. We try to guess, we try to assess as much as we can. We try to figure it out the best we can. And that's itself a pursuit of halachta v'drachta, of trying to have HaKadosh Baruch Hu's attitude towards the world. So it could be suggested, I don't think we got into this at all on Thursday, that this could be the pshat in one of the phrases that we have in the Gemara that seems to be anti-laughter. The Gemara has a phrase in the Seches Brachos. The Gemara says that the Pasuk in Shir HaMalos that we're all familiar with, Oz Yimaleis Cholpinu. So it says in the Gemara, Asuol Yodam Lamaleis Cholpiv Olam Hazat, that it's prohibited for someone to fill his mouth with laughter in this world, because the Pasuk says, Oz Yimale Sotpinu, that then, that's when our mouths will fill with laughter. So there's a lot of discussion about what that means. Every phrase in that, every word in that phrase is subject to a lot of debate. What does it mean to be Mimale Sotpiv? What does the word Aser mean? Is it really Aser? Is it Midas Chasidus? What is schok? Schok only refer to a certain type of laughter. What does ba'olam hazeh mean? Is this an issue of galus? Is this an issue of physicality? Does it have to do with the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash? Does it belong to Hilchos Tisha B'Av, where the Shulchan Aruch has it? What exactly is the scope and the range of this concept is subject to a lot of discussion and a lot of debate. Every word of that phrase is subject to discussion. What is Asr, what is Malay, what is Schok, what is Old Mazeh, all of it is a topic of analysis. So, our Los Angeles reference in the middle of that. But, so, that's all a topic of discussion, but perhaps we could suggest that what it means is that it's a reference to this idea that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the one who can laugh, so to speak. He has a sense of perspective because he sees the whole world together. He sees how everything fits in. And ba'olam hazeh, we don't really have that capacity. We can try. We try balachta b'dracha to understand the world the way God does. But the fact is, we're very limited. The fact is, we can only see what we can see. And we have to recognize that we don't totally get it. So l'malis chokpiv, to suggest that we completely see the whole story, we have to recognize that's not true. We have to recognize that we don't see the whole story. But, of course, the emphasis is really on the positive, that this whole issue that the Gemara derives comes from the fact that the Pasuk is telling us that there will be a time when it is appropriate. That Oz Yimale Schokpinu, that then we will be able to fill our mouths with laughter. So apparently it's a reference to the idea that, as we say in English, you know, someday we'll look back and laugh. Someday we'll be able to see how everything fits in when there is a full geula. So then we'll see that all the things that bothered us so much are not really such a big deal, and all the things that we worried about a lot didn't necessarily have to have such an impact. But until then, we're lacking in our ability to fully chap, and that's perhaps what's being indicated here. So if that's the idea, so we could also suggest that that's how Purim really becomes entwined with the notion of levity. The idea that Purim has become a day in which we joke around, in which we express a sense of humor. So it's not 100% clear where that starts from. There are those who connect it to the fact that the Pasuk says of an hafel, that everything is turned upside down. But it's not enough of an explanation. And the Rishonim, we do find that there is such a consideration that there are certain kulas, people are mochel on certain issues of property rights. If somebody spills on your carpet during the Purim party, so you're mochel. If somebody takes your stuff in a minor way, maybe you're mochel. That's the way people celebrate. We're showing talk about that as well. But there is such a concept. But just thematically, how humor got involved So perhaps we could suggest that it has a very strong link to what we were talking about just now. Now we know the Talmud tells us appropriately in the Sefer Shabbos, Daf Peches, the Gemara says that there is a. Thank you. Not missing. See things right in front of our face. That's the point. So then you look back and you realize that it was all there. That at the moment you think you're missing something important. That's right. It has to pun him. Exactly. So, yeah, Pechas. So the Gemara has a discussion about what does it mean when the Megillah says, Kimu v'kibu ha-Yehudim. So what is that talking about? So the Gemara says that this is a reference to Kabbalah Satara, and that this seems to be somewhat of a sira that we just read a few weeks ago, Parshas Yisro, or Parshas Nevadim, and we're told that the Jews are given the Torah, they said, Naseh B'Nishma, they said that we'll very happily accept the Torah. And yet, the Gemara says over there in Shabbos that it's not so simple, that really they weren't so excited to get the Torah, the Kafu Aleim Harkigigas, because Baruch Hu had to take them out and hold it upside down on top of their heads and say, you want to accept the Torah, great, if not, it's not going to work out so well for you, Shantahik Fuyasma. So that's a little bit difficult, as Tosfos points out, it seems to contradict the Psukim, right? That the Psukim say we were very excited about it, so what exactly is going on? So the Medrash Tanchuma suggests in Parshas Noah, the Medrash says that what is going on is that there's two different levels here, that the Torah Shebichsav. So we were fine with that. We were willing to accept the Torah Shebichsav. We said Naseh V'Nishma. But when it came to the Torah Shebaalpeh, so that seems so burdensome, that was so overwhelming, that was too much for us to take. So many chumras and so many diyukim and so many details, and you got to spend a week talking about refuah. It's too much to keep track of, so that we weren't interested in accepting. So Kadosh Baruch Hu said, no, it's a package deal, so therefore you have to take the whole thing. I don't want to come to it. Pasuk doesn't really spell that out. The Gemara has a drasha. The pasuk says, "Vayitzia save the tachtis ahar." And so the Gemara comments on that. The tachtis ahar, what was going on there? They're called lame hard to give us, but it's hard to find it so explicitly. No, so that you don't find that so explicit. That's why Chazal understood. So that was what we were not willing to take. And then Kimu v'Kibbul HaYehudim, so then after the Nes of Purim, so then the Jews willingly accepted. Purim. Comment on that?
It's interesting, when we said the first aspect, is that
Kimu v'Kibbul HaYehudim, Peter said. Right, so the Dilma Gaon has a shot on that, because the Gemara also has elsewhere, has a different interpretation. So he has the idea that one is on the Kri and one is on the Ksid. If I remember correctly, he notes that the Gemara, one Rashi says Kiddichsiv, and one says Shanamar, and that it works out based on which, I forgot which one is which, but it works out somehow that it has one Rashi on the Kri and one Rashi on the Ksiv. But just saying even more than that the whole idea of the Torah Shebaal Peh is necessary to understand it is especially relevant and resonant.
It's not like there's a lot of Kri Ksiv in the Gemara,
like
the
Ghost
Whistles,
they're
left
and right. Because the Shavuos, the Torah Shebaal Peh, is more important. Okay, so in any event, so this idea really fits what we're saying, that essentially here, at the moment when Torah was given, so everything seemed very burdensome, everything seemed very overwhelming. But then, looking back in the aftermath of a great miracle, many years later, then you're able to see how everything really fits, and that which was so overwhelming actually is beautiful, and that which was too much actually fits in perfectly. And we are able to appreciate everything in retrospect. So that becomes the theme of Purim. And perhaps that therefore becomes the message of Purim. Purim becomes the chag of a sense of humor because it's the chag of perspective. And it is the day in which we try to see the beauty in everything even when we don't necessarily recognize it right away. So therefore, maybe the tafkid of Purim is that we derive simcha from a lot of things, even not just necessarily the things that are associated with Purim. So you find that also that the Shulchan Aruch has a psak that was controversial. The Shulchan Aruch had a ruling that it was permissible to get married on Purim. don't know if your guests would appreciate it too much, but strictly speaking, it says mutter, and others disagree. Others said that this should be wrong because we have a idea of Eima Arvin Simcha B'Simcha. We talked about that last week also, so we know it's prohibited in the Torah to get married on Chol Moed Sukkot and Chol Moed Pesach. So if that's the case, so all right, so tell me if her is Rabbanan, so we should say it should be also Midr Rabbanan, we should say it should still be wrong. Shei Eima Arvin Simcha B'Simcha. So there's a lot of explanations as to why this is. And some suggest that there's a fundamental difference between the simcha of, let's say, Pesach and the simcha of Purim. But in the context of Pesach, so the Torah says, Samachta bifagecha, that the simcha has to be specifically in the chag. And any other simcha you're going to bring in, the simcha of your wedding, that's going to be competition. That's going to be a dilution of the simcha of Yontif. But on Purim, so the Megillah says that Purim is a Yom Mishta V'Simcha. It's a day of Simcha. Not necessarily only Simcha of Purim, but anything that brings you joy, anything that allows you to see this positive perspective in life, is itself a fulfillment of the idea of Simcha's Purim. So Purim, perhaps along these lines, has become a day when we joke around, a day in which we laugh. And there are practices that are more controversial and there are practices that are more accepted. Again, I don't remember how much we said about this on Thursday. I just remember going through it very quickly, so I just wanted to fill in some more of the details. So if I repeat anything from Thursday, I'm sure I will, but I apologize for repeating too much. I just wanted to fill in some of the details. We went through it very quickly then. So there is a Masorah again that we showed them talk about being mochel on certain things. But the idea of joking around is really a little bit of a later development and has at least two controversial manifestations. And it has the manifestation of Purim Torah, of a fake Divrei Torah, where you can have a very brilliant presentation, but it doesn't necessarily hold up on the light of day, the sober moods. And you have also the Purim Spiel, which you know, is also controversial, but also is widely accepted. So here in our yeshiva, we accept both of those things happily, but it's worth discussing a little bit what that's about. It's discussing a little bit what the issues are. So the Purim Torah probably is a little bit more accepted in general, but there were those who objected to that also, thought that was some type of a bizayim. But interesting in general. So we talk about humor. So the Gemara says also in the Sefer Shabbos, the Rav would open his shir with a joke, with a milsa b'duchsa. So that's a pedagogical technique we find throughout Shas, right? That the Gemara is apparently willing to use this technique. Somebody once asked Rabbi Arya Kaplan if there are any jokes from the Talmud, and he responded, yes, but they're all old. True, there are old jokes in the Talmud, so we don't always pick them up. We're not necessarily attuned to them. But the Gemara does have a presentation where occasionally something clearly is not 100% straightforward. And the Gemara tells us that Rav would engage in a milsa b'duchsa in the beginning of Shir. So there are among the Mefarshim, or the Akademim, and a few others who didn't understand that as a joke, who thought that it means a creative word, it's not necessarily true. It's very populish, but the common interpretation is that it does mean a joke. But the Purim Torah of Purim, so probably fits either definition, either it's a joke or it's a popul, is not exactly true. But there is such a tradition, so in the Velazhny Yeshiva, they had such a mahalach, somebody was appointed to say Shir on Purim, and it was expected that the Shir would fit the mood of the day. And it's brought down in some of the history books. There are a lot of history written about Velazhny and that whole world. So it's brought down that somebody was giving shir on Purim. I first heard the story from Rabbi Blythe, but it's also, you can read about it, that somebody was giving shir on Purim, and he gave a whole shir for an hour and a half. It was a brilliant shir. He was reconciling the stira between two Rambams. It was a great year, but it didn't seem so Purim-like. So afterwards, the students came up to him and said, Rabbi, Purim. And the Rebbe responded, what do you mean? I made up both Rambams. The whole thing was a joke, and we didn't appreciate what was going on. So it's jokes on them, I guess. But anyway, so Purim Torah has a Masorah. And the Purim Spiel also has a Masorah that also goes from Halajim. It's important to realize that it's a controversial practice. Right, that it's a practice that Rabbi Yosef has a tshuva against it. Tom has a discussion about this, not so positive. And Rabbi Sternbach has a sefer, going back with the generations of Yosef C. Bashinsky. There is a literature about this that is less than encouraging, as you can understand what the potential issues are. But on the other hand, clearly in many yeshivas it was accepted wholeheartedly. Including again in the Velazhny Yeshiva. Shechter has pointed out on occasion that the Yeshiva of Yitzhak Elchanan was founded by people who came over from Velazhny. And so maybe we could argue that our practices should come from Velazhny. So clearly not all of our practices come from Velazhny, but maybe some of them do. So in Velazhny they certainly had a Purim Spiel. That's definitely discussed in the history books, and it seems very much like our Purim Spiel, that the idea is that, for example, it's brought down that the best Talmud in Velazhny in the days of the Nitziv, so the best Talmud did a spot-on imitation of the Nitziv. Right? Sound familiar? And it says there is such a Masorah, and the best Talmud, his name was Avraham Yitzchak HaKohen Kuk, who went on to great fame in other areas, and started his own yeshiva. And in the yeshiva, so there was a Talmud who was the great-grandson of the Nitziv, and he, on Purim, did a spot-on imitation of Rav Kook. So Rav Kook said, oh, okay, so I've been paid back. See, the cycle continues. So there is a Masorah in Velazhny to have such a practice, a Masorah in Tel, in other yeshivas. And that Masorah has been carried on happily in our yeshiva as well. But it's worth trying to understand a little bit what the nature of the objections are so we could figure out how exactly we make sure that we're in keeping with them and make sure that we don't violate any of the issues. So we can guess a little bit what the issues are. You know, clearly there is a risk of bizayin tamidei chachamim, there's a risk of bizayin anyway. Anyone is a prohibition of Albanus Pnei Chaver Barabin. It's a prohibition of Lashon Hara. So clearly we have a great Kveda that we have to try on to stay on the right side, more than try, have to really work hard to stay on the right side of those issues. So how do you stay on the right side of those issues? So first of all, it's always good to have rabbinic supervision, rabbinic guidance, because this is an issue where it's tricky. But it's interesting to try to figure out what exactly the lumdus of the Heter is. So you could say it's following. I think this also gives us a little bit of insight as to the proper type of attitude and the proper type of perspective. The truth is to say that it's a joke, let's say in terms of Hilchos Lashon Hara, so to say that it's a joke doesn't really help, doesn't do so much for us, because the Rambam and the Chafetz Chaim both say straight out that Lashon Hara Daras Chok is Asur. Whether it's one of them says it's Lashon Hara Mamish, one says it's Davak Lashon Hara. So the question is, how do we address that? So we have to figure out what exactly that means. So Lashon Hara Derech Chok, it's interesting. First of all, a lot of things have happened Derech Chok. We don't even have a tzad kulos. And nowadays, you know, you have a bully, somebody beats up on somebody, or somebody plays a mean practical joke, and he says, okay, it was a joke. So that's not even a tzad heter, because what he means by the joke is he means he had a good time. That means, okay, so he's a sadist, that's not a kula, that makes it worse. Now, if a victim was having a good time also, so then maybe there's a tzad to talk about. So when it comes to Lashon Hara, okay, so there's a little bit more to say, because if you don't mean something seriously, so you could see, okay, why that would be a little bit less problematic. But on the surface, that's not an automatic heter, apparently at all. So what is the heter? I think the heter is based more on a different halacha, Hilchos Lashon Hara, which is actually right there in the next to it in the Chafetz Chaim as well, that there is a sugi in the middle of Maseches Erechim, and this is a whole discussion we could have more detail at a different time, but the Gemara has a concept that kol milsa desamrei ape mara, that anything that's said in front of the person, anything that would be said in front of the person who you're talking about, alas, for whom Mishum Lishkar, there's no prohibition of Lashon Hara. So what does that mean? So Tosfos explains what it means, and it could be this is relevant also to the discussion of figuring out what Apei Tlasim is. Apei Tlasim, the idea of something said in public, is a much more complicated sugya. There's a number of different interpretations. Apei Mara is also a complicated sugya. There's also a number of different interpretations. Whether or not this is true, or even the Hilchos says there is such a hetter or not, there's a lot written about this. But Tosfos has a specific perspective which really applies to both. Tosfos appears in Maseches Erechin and also in Maseches Bava Basra in the third parak, which we learned a few years ago, where Tosfos basically says that we're talking about a certain type of comment. You have a comment that would be said in front of the person because the speaker, we're assuming, is a decent person. So presumably he wouldn't want to cause pain to the person by saying something bad about him in his presence. So therefore we could assume that if the person was actually there, if they're saying something and we're not sure how it should be taken, that's how Tosfos understands that there's somewhat ambiguous. We don't know if he really means it in a nasty way or if he means it in a positive way. So therefore it should be taken in a positive way because we could assume the person's a decent person. He's not trying to inflict pain on somebody. So therefore, if the person would be there, he'd still say the same thing. So that's the indication that it's mutter. Because man hazeh, we don't necessarily have the same sensitivity. Because we have an internet culture where people seem to be completely comfortable saying things they know will be seen by the whole world and will be seen by the person they're talking about. And they have no limits whatsoever in what they say. So clearly, there is a risk today that in some cultures, some aspects of the culture, we've lost that sensitivity. But hopefully we haven't completely lost that sensitivity. So in the context of the Purim Shpiel, so you have people who are portrayed in the Shpiel, are sitting there and enjoying it, and laughing loudly, and hoping they're in it. So then the Mela, hopefully if that's the environment that you've created, so then that should be a hochacha itself, that everything should be taken in the right spirit. And that should show that this is not meant with any nasty intent, that this is a loving expression that's expressed in a different way all year round, expressed differently. On Purim, Benahafoku, it gets a little bit of a different language, but that this is just as much of a expression of chiba and kavod as everything else that happens all year round. So the fact that the people who are portrayed, at least for the most part, maybe somebody would show up, but at least for the most part, they're invited to be there, and they're there, and they're happily enjoying it. So that should be a hochacha, that's the spirit, and that's what we strive for. And I want to clarify what I'm saying. I'm not necessarily saying that it means they're mochel, because it's actually a discussion about that as well, that if it really was something that was humiliating, so then it's not 100% clear that mechila is either genuine or worse. Now, sometimes a person is mochel because he feels pressured, and there's a whole discussion of Sayra de Gufa, if somebody really is suffering personally, whether or not mechila, not mechila after the fact, it can be mochel for any offense that somebody does to you, but mochel in the sense of letting it happen beforehand, the whole discussion about whether or not there is such a concept of mechila. So here, the fact that people are present, we're not saying that that itself is an expression of mechila, it's an expression that they're happy about, an expression that they want it, and therefore that's a hochacha on the whole thing that is done in the right atmosphere. So here, I believe we're successful, I hope, in yeshiva, at least the most part, hopefully completely, in creating an environment where the Purim Shpiel is taken as a loving expression of camaraderie rather than any type of hostility, and the participation of the people who are portrayed and the eager participation is hopefully taken as a hochacha that is the correct atmosphere. So that's what we strive for here. I think that's what we can be in agreement. So that's in terms of some of the more obvious issues, the issues of Bizoyan and Halbanos Pnei Chaver B'Rabim and the like. But there is a more subtle issue, which we started to say a little bit on Thursday, but again, we rushed through it, so just to explain a little bit more. So we talked about Amalek and what exactly the role of Amalek in this whole story is and why it was important to have Parsha Zachar specifically before Purim, which is why we rushed to say this on Thursday, but then just to fill in a little more detail. So Amalek is also relevant to the type of sense of humor that we want to have. Because Chazal have a reference, they call Amalek a Letz. Letz takil fesi yarim, Chazal say Letz is Amalek. So as we started to say, and the footnote discusses, everyone should really read this very important essay, the first Maimur in Tachi Yisbeth on Purim, where the footnote discusses what does that mean to say Amalek is a Letz that doesn't fit at all the way we would cast it in central casting. The picture for Amalek would not be looking like a clown. It's not the imagery that one would have for such a terrorist, essentially. We would use the model of a terrorist. We have enough of those. We wouldn't use the model of a clown to picture Amalek. So Rav Huttner explains what Leitzanus means. We, in modern Hebrew, so we use Leitzanus to mean clowning around, and we use it, Letz, to mean a clown. I mean, somebody who jokes around. But it's not clear that that's what it means in Talmudic literature. In the Gemara it says, this is another one of the anti-humor lines, seems like an anti-humor line, Kolut Sanusa Asura, Chutzmi Lusanusa Davodos Kochavim, right? That all Leitzanus is prohibited, with the exception of Leitzanus that's directed at Avodah Zarah. So what is the meaning of Leitzanus in that context? It means somebody who is a cynic, somebody who scoffs, who says that things aren't really as important as they appear. And he goes on, he quotes from Rabbeinu Yonah, that Rabbeinu Yonah, right, the pasuk says, V'ish lefi mahalalo. And Rabbeinu Yonah explains, Adam Nikar, what does that mean, V'ish lefi mahalalo? And it sounds like it means everybody according to his praise. So that's a little bit of a strange idea. If you want to say that you can judge a person based on what people say about him. So sometimes it's a good starting point, but we know that that's not the whole story. Right? We know that there are a lot of unsung heroes in the world, there are a lot of people who do great things and nobody says anything about them, and we know there are a lot of people who people say great things about who aren't so great. So to say that a person can be judged based on his praise, it's not really the case. So Rabbeinu Yonah explains that it means Adam Nikar Lufi Mashahu Mahalel. That a person can be recognized based on that which he praises. So if he praises something, it shows you where his values are. It says somewhat ironically that, or somewhat counterintuitively, you might think, okay, we have a meritocracy, it's only fair we should judge people based on what they do. So that's nice, but he goes a step further, so it's not even fair to judge people based on what they do, because people are not always yet at where they want to be. And it's more of a statement about somebody to look who they look up to, look who their role models are. That says a lot more about their value system than what they actually do. So look to who they praise, look who they say great things about. That shows you what they're really about. So Adam Nikar Lefi Mashahu Mahalel. So it goes on to say that the Koach HaHilul, therefore, based on this, says the ability to esteem something, to give something importance. It's really one of the most powerful tools a human being has, because if this is really like Rabbeinu Yonah says, this is really how we can take the measure of a man, not even by what he does, because that itself may have all kinds of external impediments, but based on what he values. So then your ability to value something is the strongest value, is the strongest power that you have. The Koach HaHilul, he says, is therefore really the biggest strength that we have. And the Koach HaZilzul is the opposite. Saying that something is not important is the opposite of the Koach HaHilul. So Avodah Zarah is the ultimate misuse of the Koach HaHilul. That's where you're basically saying the ultimate Koach HaHilul is Avodah, is worship. And Avodah Zarah is the ultimate misplacing of the Koach HaHilul. So in the case of Avodah Zarah, so you can see why Leitzanus is appropriate. Leitzanus in general is a very bad midah. Scoffing and cynicism is very destructive. It's appropriate in the context of Avodah Zarah, because there you have the misuse of the Koach HaHilul, so it should be knocked down by cynicism. But in general, a cynic attitude is very, very dangerous, and that's what the Mesilas Yesharim says, I think in the fifth parak, that the tiniest amount of Leitzanus can knock away all the Musar in the world, because if a person is cynical, the person doesn't think anything's important, so you're never going to get through to him no matter what you say. He could have, he could be at Matan Torah, and Matan Torah is not going to make a difference. It's what the Ramban says. The Ramban says in Chumash that when the Torah was given, and they called us and brought him, there was a whole show And the pasuk says that the Jews were told not to be afraid. Kila ba'avor nasos eschem. That all of this was done v'nasos eschem. So what does that mean, v'nasos? A word has a couple different meanings. The Ramban says it was a test. That it was a way of seeing that are the Jews capable of being wowed? Do they see thunder or lightning and they think that's amazing? Or do they say, been there, done that. That's not too impressive. Because if they're going to have a cynical attitude, so then it doesn't matter. The Torah could be what the Torah is, the greatest gift in the history of mankind. If you don't have the ability to see greatness, it's not going to have a hashpah. But if you believe that you can recognize when something is a great thing, when you see when something's a big deal, so then that could have an impact on you. So that's crucial. So if you're a cynic, you don't think anything is worthwhile, so then forget it. There's no point in showing up to Musher Seder or anything, because nothing's going to have any impact no matter what. So Leitzonus is in general a very destructive type of attitude, and that was the attitude of Amalek. Amalek, not that they were telling jokes, but Amalek's whole message was that the Jews shouldn't be taken so seriously. Okay, so you think Kriyas Yamsuf, you see us Mitzrayim is so scary. Oh, let's not attack them. I'll show you we can attack them. We can jump in, like Chazal say, they were the Ambachi HaRosachas, they were a boiling bath, and everybody was afraid to jump in. So you see, you can jump in, they're not so scared. So that attitude of knocking down the importance, that's what Amalek represents. And therefore, this is what that imagery is meant to convey. So based on what we've been developing, that essentially the idea of a sense of humor that is in the fulfillment of Alach HaBedracha, that maybe Purim is meant to convey to us, is that we should have a sense of perspective, that we should be able to figure out what's important and what's less important. So if we take everything too seriously, okay, so then we're not fulfilling this directive. But if we take nothing seriously, if we become a cynic, so then clearly we've gone too far. Clearly we're on the other side of the fence. And that's obviously not what we're going for either. So what we wanted to suggest on Thursday, and again, we're just still fleshing out a little bit now, and having gone through Parsha Zacha, that the mentality of Parsha Zacha, the mentality of ingraining our consciousness against the mindset of Amalek, is that on Purim we're going to try to cultivate our sense of humor in the most appropriate way possible, try to develop as much as we can a Jewish sense of humor, and through that process also stay as far away as possible from the dangers of Amalek and all of its incarnation. Hi.
Wherever he was talking about the point that since the Rebbeim are sitting there, there's a whole thought that they don't mind.
Well, so I should say not exactly like that. So it's part of it. But basically, not that they don't mind, because that gets more into a mechila discussion. So that's a little bit what I don't want to say. I don't want to say that it shows their mochel, because if there's what to be mochel, then it already gets a little tricky. And it's not clear that mechila can work. Now, sometimes there are people who insist they don't want to be part of it, which means, you know, and certainly not mochel or anything like it. But even mechila is probably not what we're shooting for. We're shooting for a setting where we don't need mechila. And that the same way that maybe, again, the proper imagery is not trying to find a heter for Lashon Hara Derech Schok, because that's going to be questionable no matter what. We're trying to follow the path of Ape Mara. That the Gemara has this line that Ape Mara is mutter, and the whole discussion what that means. But Tosfos' idea, what it means, that it's a hochacha, that something you would say in the person's presence is a control. That if you're a decent person, again, this was written in the pre-internet era, and hopefully on some level, at least in the Beis HaMedrash, we're still in the pre, I don't mean the whole internet, I'm referring to the anonymous blogging part of the internet. Hopefully in the Beis Medrash culture is still very far away from the anonymous blogging culture. So we still hold on to the values that Tosfos is expressing. So, okay, so we're all nichshol and lashon hara, we're all ready to say things behind people's back. Unfortunately, as the Gemara says, hakol v'avak lashon hara, none of us are free of that. But at least we have a sensitivity. The person's right in front of us, so we're not going to want to say something that's going to be hurtful. So how do we know whether it's good or bad? So some things are obviously bad. But some things are borderline. This is what we call possibly avak lashon hara, depending on the context, the suffix avak lashon hara. And so some things are borderline. And I sometimes give an example. So let's say I want to say, that Bob, you can always rely on him. So what do I mean? So I could mean you can always rely on him. He's a good, trustworthy person. Or it could mean you could always rely on him to mess up. You could always rely on him to make a mistake or to do the wrong thing. So it's going to be a little context dependent. Right, maybe I shouldn't say such a statement, because if there's a possibility that people are going to misunderstand me, they're going to think I mean it negatively. So maybe we should say, I shouldn't say this at all. Tzavah Lashon Hara is going to create a bad image in people's minds. So what Tosis is saying is, well, what's the context? If I take you aside and I say, that's bad, you can always rely on him, so you have no idea how to read it, then you might read it negatively. But if I get up at the shul dinner and I say, Bob, you can always rely on him, and Bob is sitting there beaming, so then presumably I mean it positively. I mean, it's unclear context whether I mean it positively or negatively. So presumably I mean it positively because I'm getting up Ape Plus in front of all these people, and I'm getting up Ape Mara in his presence, and I'm saying it. So then, again, I'm assuming I'm a decent person. So then presumably I mean it in the positive sense.
Is that only from the Lashon Hara perspective, not from the personal embarrassment perspective?
So if it's personal embarrassment, that's always going to be a problem.
But hopefully. Just because people are sitting there and they want to be there, it doesn't necessarily mean that they know what everybody's going to say.
So that's why you're not safe unless you have responsible people doing it in the first place. But the people who are doing it are hopefully, there's a culture that's created that it's understood that everything that's said is said affectionately. No one's going to say anything, hopefully, that's vicious, right? No one's going to say anything that's objectively bad. So the only question is, when they make a joke up there, how is it portrayed? Is that portrayed as a real attitude of disdain towards the person who's being portrayed? Or is it an affectionate statement, which is different than the way you'd say it the rest of the year, but it's an expression of affection and overall esteem for the person?
So if
they're going to say something that's going to be embarrassing, so that's why, again, you have to have some type of maturity and awareness in terms of what you're saying. And anything that's genuinely embarrassing, so the people writing it have to be careful not to say such things. And it's not clear if there's genuine embarrassment whether or not mechila works. Again, what I mean by working is clearly they can be mochel after the fact. I mean, you can be mochel any offense afterwards. But mochel in terms of allowing it, saying beforehand, it's okay, you can be mevazmi, it's not clear that there is such a thing. So hopefully people aren't actually mevuza, you're not saying anything that actually creates real embarrassment. You're saying something which, okay, it's not clear, what's my attitude? Is my attitude, I'm saying this because I disdain the person, or am I saying this because we have a loving relationship and I esteem them so much, and this is how we see them in the context of our family? So the fact that we're doing it in their presence, and they happily came back last year, they came last year, they came back this year. We've been doing this for years, and they keep coming back, and nobody runs out crying, and nobody ends up having any issues. So then that shows that the culture that's created is a culture that is loving and respectful rather than disdainful. But it's a thin line, so Baruch Hashem, we have a lot of very wise people in this yeshiva who are able to maintain that balance. I think that's the... If I had to pick one svara to explain how the process is developed, I think that's the most likely. Hi.
One purpose of the prayer spiel is to provide constructive feedback and illustration. Mm-hmm. So some of the things they say are true, like every year they usually criticize some kind of the bureaucracy or have here. So they mean that, like, they really mean it. They're not just joking.
Right, but hopefully, again, they mean it lovingly in the sense that you're so wonderful and you'd be even more wonderful, more wonderful like this. And it's not the kind of criticism where you are cutting at the heart of somebody's self-esteem. I think you could also say metaphorically, Gemara discusses, Tosfos discusses, Rav saying a joke in the beginning of Shir. So there is a topic, yes, Gemara talks about it in the Tosfos also, that don't we normally say that Talmud Torah has to be done the aim of a year of Eresis of the Zay, you have to have a very serious attitude. So there's two Teirushim given. One is that the Talmidim have to be serious with the Rebbe, you can be having a great time, you can be saying whatever you want. The other Teretz is that the content has to be, the middle has to be serious, but the beginning and the end, there could be a joke. So you can interpret that chronologically, you know, just the first sentence, the last sentence, or you can interpret that just in terms of where it fits in, that the substance should be serious substance. A person who's really transmitting Torah should be serious Torah. But the externals, the beginning and the end, that can be a little bit less serious. And so too, one could metaphorically say, just in terms of what people, again, you have to know who you're dealing with, which is why also here in Yeshiva, I think there is a certain masorah about who's involved and who's not involved, and they notice a certain recurring cast of characters in terms of who's portrayed, because you get a sense of how people perceive things and how the subjects themselves are willing to be portrayed. But the idea, I think you could maybe metaphorically say from that beginning to end idea, is that there are some things that go to your essence and there are some things that are external. And as a general rule, people are very sensitive about things that are very fundamental to their self-esteem and to their identity, and people are much less sensitive about things that are much more external. So you talk about, let's say, giving constructive criticism to the administration. So if your whole point is to get up there and say the administration is terrible, so then it's going to be very hurtful. But you know, if the point is a loving portrayal of the administration, you know, a gentle suggestion that they could do an even better job if this was tweaked, so then that's not going to be seen as something that's going to cause any embarrassment. And again, there's no question, there's a lot of judgment and chachma that has to be brought to bear, because it certainly is possible to make a mistake in this area. Hi.
I'm just wondering, in general, I think culturally satire has a very powerful tool.
Mm-hmm. So then that gets a little complex also, you know, that, so first of all, so then there are times when outright, what we would think of outright Lashon Hara as mutter, you know, that something that is constructive and something that's beneficial to society as a whole has a place. So the question is how that should be expressed and under what conditions. So we have a category called toelas, that there are times when Chafetz Chaim has a bunch of conditions. It's a whole story, it's a much longer discussion. We wanted to get a little bit of the shadows today, and we're almost out of time without even starting, so let's, we won't be able to get into all of it today, but there is a there is such a concept of Lashon Hara L'Kolelis. So sometimes, whether that means in article form or whether that means in other contexts, articles very often should not be the first resort. Depends on how things, what type of structure you had, but there is context in which it's appropriate to bring problems to light and with the interest of fixing that. So then, if that's the case, if you already accepted that, so the satire make it any worse? So it depends, you know, if that creates an atmosphere of zilzal at the same time, so then that probably does make it worse. If it creates the opposite, which is maybe a little bit what Rob's getting at, that maybe Purim is the time when satire could really go in either direction. Maybe it could make criticism more painful, it could make criticism less painful. So sometimes, if you're just going to say something straight out, then it's painful but had to be said. But if you're also joking around about it, it creates an atmosphere of nastiness which makes it worse, and it's not necessary. And if it becomes demeaning to the person, so then presumably that would be an independent there on top of whatever is being said, if it's not necessary in order to make his point. However, the flip side is also true, especially because we have a Purim. So, and it's a little bit what Abraham was getting at, that the idea of Purim being used as criticism, which there are those who perceived it that way as a venue for constructive criticism. One of the Rashi Yeshiva here once said that Purim Shpil is the only opportunity for Rebbeim to get the constructive muscle, so to speak. So the idea is that there, the humorous context softens things, hopefully, again, if it's done appropriately. So if that's the case, so then it's going to be a better way of doing it. And if it's going to create a hurtful, demeaning approach, then it's going to be a worse way of doing it. And Purim does create that venue a little bit, the idea that there is an atmosphere where everything is taken a little bit less seriously. So it's a way to kind of mix something in a way that it's less obvious. So you make a joke on Purim, again, if it's not a vicious type of joke, but it's somewhat of a mildly critical kind of idea. So then, because, okay, so everyone can read it as, well, you have to make a joke anyway because you need the line from the spiel, so it can be taken half jokingly, half affectionately, three halves already per math, half with some toelas. Right, exactly. So then maybe it's a venue in which things can be much more effectively transmitted without causing any pain. Which, you know what that's similar to? So let's say you have an iser of refuah on Shabbos, right? And the whole iser is that you can't take medicine in a way that it's nicker what you're doing, because that creates the impression that it's mutter to do anything for the purposes of refuah on Shabbos. So then there is a svara that al yidei shinoi it should be mutter, and that let's say, for example, if you mix the medicine into food or drink, and then you consume it that way, so many assume that was mutter. Why? Because even though it has the same effect as the refuah, even though practically it does the exact same thing, because it's mixed in with the food and the drink, so it's not nicker that that's their l'shem refuah. Hi. So that might be the Gemara and Brachas. There's some discussion about what sentence to focus on in terms of what aspect to focus on in terms of what's making things mutter. So that's why there's a little bit of a discussion about this. Pashtus Hashinoi should make something mutter right away. Or at least, you know, Mokom Tsar, the post can say that if you're really pretty miserable, then Hashinoi is a good way to go. But it's a question of what constitutes Hashinoi. So some say that the Hashinoi has to be done specifically Mayor of Shabbos. It doesn't necessarily have to apply to all Shinuyim, because a certain Shinoi specifically of mixing it into food and drink and then consuming it as food and drink. So there, for some reason, you find that a lot of posts can insist that it has to be done Mayor of Shabbos that way, which is going to be a little bit harder because you have to be aware of it. It's hard to retroactively do this. But if you know that this may come up, so then it would be perhaps wise to do this. Question about that?
This applies to Mei Kosher
So Chol Shem Lechem may be mutter anyway, but it may be even that they have a Meichosh where you're kind of on the border, so you're really pretty miserable. So then they recommend taking it out Derech Shinoi, and Derech Shinoi could mean mixing it in. So it's really the same type of idea that here the Toelis is going to be the same. You're doing this L'Shem before, just like you give a person Musr, L'Shem giving the Musr, but because it's mixed in with a drink, just like the Musr is mixed in with the Purim joking, so it's not perceived, it's not Musa Milsa, that it's being done for that purpose, so therefore it's able to achieve that goal without violating any concern. So hopefully that's what happens on Purim also, if to the extent that it's used for criticism. We're not assuming that it's necessarily used for that purpose at all, but I think those who are assuming there were Rabbanim who felt that it had a role in that place as well, and it's comparable to medicine mixed in with the refuah. Medicine mixed in with the food, that they're affecting refuah behind the scenes. So too, that's a way of a little bit mixing in our halacha and maisa topic with the hashkafa topic that ended up taking up completely all of our time. So, you have a question about that? About which one?
No, I've been taking them all the time.
Yes.
But, I don't know if we said this, but there's a famous Sifot Musar where he talks about, talks about how even if people have good intentions and things about another Mochavero, it's like playing with fire. So
correct.
Is that not supposed to be taken literally in light of what we were saying?
No, I think that's a very big deal. I think that's what this is, why this is an area where people have to be very, very careful. Intentions alone are not going to do it. If you're saying something that's seriously embarrassing, so good intentions are not going to save you. The question is, we have a middle ground here, right? So you're getting up, let's say it broadly, okay? So, okay, if I use you for example, since you asked me the question. Right, so I get up and I make a joke about Gil Simchi. Right, so the question is, what do the assembled people here interpret from the fact that I made a joke about him? So is that my way of saying that I don't really esteem him so much because I'm treating him lightly? Or is that my way of saying I love him and I respect everything that's important about him, and I'm so affectionate about him that I can make a joke about him also at the same time as I esteem him no less? So it's a little bit ambiguous. People could interpret it either way. So there's a context which will make it clear. I think that's what Tosfos is saying, that if it's Davka when Gil's not in the room, but I start making snide comments, and then as soon as you're here, all of a sudden they stop, then people realize that this is an expression of disdain. And if you're here, and again, I'm not an anonymous blogger, but I'm hopefully, you know, a decent person, so then apparently I mean it affectionately, or else why would I say such a thing in your face if it's going to cause you to feel I disdain you? So what we're aiming for is not something that would independently be embarrassing. If I'm going to get up here and reveal some terrible secret about somebody, So then that's going to be embarrassing regardless of my intent. So that was what Chaim Shmuel Levitz is saying, that if I'm going to inflict pain, so then it's not going to matter what my intent is. But we're talking about a middle ground here where I'm not actually saying anything objectively embarrassing. But what about the fact, how could you get up and make fun of the Rebbeim? How could you get up and imitate the Rebbeim? Isn't that itself a zilzul? So no, it's not a zilzul because the context has been created where that's not perceived as a zilzul, where it's perceived as affectionate. And you have to have the context. The story is told that, a cousin told me that that in Telz, they had a very chashuv Baal Musar from Europe who came to visit Telz in America, and he came to visit on Purim. And was shocked to see what was going on. The Purim Shpiel never heard of such a thing. So in the middle of the Shpiel, he got up and he was moches. It's crazy. And the Rashiva of Leiblach said to him, you know, with all due respect to our very distinguished visitor, you're not from America, you don't know how we do things here. And this is the Derech here. What does he mean? He doesn't mean that we're not the Rishurim, it's America, what can you do? He means that this is the culture, that this is taken. The Rebbeim are all here enjoying it. They don't feel mezuzel. And that's not the intent. Now, maybe if you never saw such a thing before and you came from Europe, you're going to be shocked. You're going to think this is incredible. But if you have a culture where this is taken affectionately, so then no one comes out of it any less respectful to the Rebbeim than they came in. So I hope the distinction is clear, that if you really got up there and said actually humiliating things, your intent's not going to save you. But we have a middle ground where you're not saying anything objectively so terrible. It's just, what can we interpret from the fact that you're getting up there and doing imitations? Is that a show of disrespect? Or is that a show of love? So the context, hopefully, that we created is that it's a show of love, it's not a show of disrespect. And that's why the intent of the speaker becomes relevant. But Reb Chaim Shmuel Levitz's point is very well taken and very important. It was said that in the context of Penina, right, that the Gemara says in the first paragraph of Baba Basra, that Penina, who was married to the same man as Chana was, and Chana didn't have any children, and Penina had a lot of children, so Penina used to make fun of her, which is obviously an act of tremendous cruelty. And that's a terrible thing. A woman is suffering, she doesn't have children, they're going to make fun of her. So the Gemara says in Baba Basra that Penina l'shem shamayim niskavna, Penina meant well. So what do you mean she meant well? So that's okay then? You know, she meant well. Apparently she thought that if she made life miserable enough, so then she'd daven harder. So what the Gemara is saying, it's okay what she did because she meant well. So that's where Reb Chaim Shmuel Levitz makes the point. He says that no, the Gemara is saying the opposite. She was punished terribly. Clearly, it didn't save her good intentions. The point is that even though she meant well, because she inflicted so much pain on Penina, so then that's not going to help the fact that she meant well. So his point is, if you're actually causing people to suffer, so then the fact you mean well doesn't help. But we're hoping that we're not creating that nobody actually is suffering. It's just a question of how should we interpret the whole fact of the spiel itself. Is that an act of disrespect? So that's going to depend on the culture that's created. And it seems, Baruch Hashem, so far the past decades that this has been going on, and certainly goes back at least a couple of decades, culture has been created where this is not a show of disrespect, but hopefully a show of the opposite. And that should be a continuing credit to the yeshiva and the faculty, and the talmidim and the faculty of the yeshiva, that's the atmosphere that continues to be cultivated and created. Okay, so we didn't get that much about refuah done, but I got that one line in which hopefully should. So tomorrow we'll finish up the halacha lemaisa of refuah, and then get into merakeid. We'll try not to spend too much time on merakeid because it has their common points with earlier malachas. We'll get the merakeid done this week also. I think also for next week's Parshas Vayakel, we should get into Melachos Mashavos a little bit more, a little bit